that's an oldie going all the way back to 1968. That's Chicago's Young Holt Unlimited Trio with Soulful Strut. It was a mega hit when released in 1968, and it went gold within just 3 months. That's drummer Isaac Red Holt, bassist L.D. Young, and on piano, Ken Chaney. Holt and Young were both from Ramsey Lewis's original jazz trio. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, November the 28th, and it is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. So much has happened. It's been an unbelievable turkey of a week. It really was. By the way, I hope those of you who spent the day yesterday with family and friends, that it was a wonderful way to just be in fellowship with each other. But my gosh, it was as if this week it just was, the pace was unbelievable and the news was all bad. So anyway, your thoughts today on the events of this week, especially. I want to also make a special point here about the long analysis we did concentrating on the legal aspect. I dare say I haven't heard it anywhere else, and this is the reason for this program, that people get an appreciation of the law and how it is manipulated and abused in order to produce a predictable result. And only now are we seeing some semblance of analysis on that level in other media organizations, only because it's, of course, unavoidable. But this is where we routinely go here on this program. It's not enough simply to report about, well, how many people are in the street demonstrating. We have to have an understanding of the systemic approach to this case and to other cases that we have been talking about here. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We're talking about the events of the week and your analysis of what's going on. Let us know what you're thinking. You've listened to several episodes, several editions of analysis. What did you glean from it, and what does it mean to you? How does it apply now to your thinking about these kinds of cases and where we want to go? That's my suggestion. Of course, as usual, it is up to you to decide where you want to go. 888-874-4888 from California. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hello, wonderful Harvey. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your great audience.
Thank you.
And I'd like to expand our horizons a little bit today. And, you know, we see each other as the other, but there's something bigger happening here. And on November 26, which is this week, an article appeared. It says here, the genetic material DNA can survive a flight through space and reentry into the Earth's atmosphere and still pass on genetic information. Scientists obtained these astonishing results during an experiment on the Texas 49 research rocket mission. What they did was they glued some DNA to the outside of a rocket, and the analysis showed that up to 53% of the DNA recovered after being exposed to the harsh vacuum of cold and vacuum of space, as well as 1,000 centigrade heat on the reentry of the into the Earth's atmosphere. And so This tells me that life is everywhere. This is proof that DNA can survive 1,000 degrees centigrade, and it's my belief, of course, that comets and meteors, which are a lot of them are water and dry ice, are packed with DNA, and I think that this is the way that that planets are inseminated with life. And we're so carbon centric, we think that all life is carbon-based, and my feeling is that life works through matter, any matter, it doesn't matter. And so there's a bigger picture. When we look at each other as the other, I don't think the truth is that we're very much all the same in 99% of the way, but that the universe is teeming with life. There is the other, and it doesn't necessarily work through, you know, maybe beyond carbon-based life form. And so I think that we have to re-examine our impressions of each other, because my feeling is that the universe is teeming with life. And that's
Thank
it.
You. Thanks for getting us started today.
Thank you.
From Dallas, Sarah, you're on the air.
Oh, greetings to you, Utrecht.
Thank you, Sarah, and to you too. How are you doing today?
I am doing not so bad, Utrecht. I'm just chilling out for this Good Friday here and just staying in and kind of absorbing everything that's going on around me while I try and get caught up with the news. And, of course, greetings to the PRN listening audience. And it was a wonderful classroom that you've been having for the past week, Utrecht. And I guess I need to turn in my papers to get my credit.
Yeah, it was like that, wasn't it? It was a legal course.
Yes, ma'am. I guess we should be turning in some term papers at the end of this course if we want to make sure that we have a proper comprehension of everything that the esteemed attorney at law has put out here, because some of what Alton said, Utrecht, it's basic civics, and I guess unfortunately in this society that we're living in, where civics are not taught anymore in schools, civics as well as basic law and American, so-called American history, this information is not taught anymore in school because it's a means of dumbing you down and making you ignorant to the facts of what it is, how it is that this country was formed, their so-called constitutions and everything else. And to get back to the case at hand and everything that has unfurled itself during this week, it has shown you us once again how this system that some of us have invested so much time and effort into, that this system, as Alton said, this system is doing exactly what it was created to do. No less than what it was created to do. And when I sit up here and I hear people are saying, okay, that we are a system of laws and all of these other boorish nonsense that you hear the president, the attorney general, and all of these people has been sprouting all over the media. This country is a country of laws that are made to protect only a few. And everything that everyone has gotten in this system is because it comes from you breaking the law. Laws are only made to keep the oppressed in their oppressed condition. As long as you follow the law as it is dictated and as it is put on the book, then you are going to remain in your oppressed situation. Everything that we've gotten from the abolishment of the Black Codes, the Jim Crow laws, the forced segregation, all of these things, we have done it because we have broken the law. So I find it very offensive when I hear people talk to and say, well, these people obey the law. If Black people obeyed the law, we would still be enslaved. That's where we would have been. So I don't even want to hear it. And to get back to the point that Alton was making, and I've made consistently on your program, Utrecht, and it's going to offend a lot of people out here who call themselves liberals, progressives, and whatever other titles they want to tag on to themselves. It has shown us once again that these so-called good white people that we are always being told about, where the hell are they? Where are they? Because
if you took a look, I mean, this is one of the very interesting things about the protests and demonstrations that have sprouted up as a result of this grand jury decision announcement. And that is, you see quite a diversity, I must say, in the turnout for the protesters.
I understand that there's been diversity in the protest, Utrecht, but what I am speaking of, I'm speaking about Missouri in particular, because we've mm-hmm. seen that they have a Democratic governor, a Democratic district attorney, Claire McCaskill, all of them are in cahoots with each other. This is a low-level civil servant who committed this act. And all that people were asking for is for an indictment to let it go before a regular jury of his peers and let them decide his guilt or innocence based on the evidence as presented itself. Not for the district attorney, who is supposed to be representing the victim, not for him to be trying to defend the criminal, who is the defendant. He is supposed to be the opposing side, who is supposed to present the case to show why this man who committed this crime, why it is that he needs to go to prison or he needs to pay some penalty for his actions. He's not supposed to be acting as his defense attorney, which is what this has shown us. And, when I say that these so-called good white people you treat, I don't need white people to come and get into a crowd with a bunch of black people in order to protest with us. What you can do, you can get into your respective communities and you can protest there by yourselves, because you know what the problem is. You know how to articulate it over to your people in a better format than we can. It takes more courage for you to stand up in your own community and to do it than for you to come with a bunch of blacks, Latinos, and Asians and want to protest with us. That is not affecting anything. A change is going to come from you standing up in your own communities and doing it. And that is what needs to be done. If you are saying that it's only a few rotten apples or bad eggs that's running around here doing these things, then you need to stand up in your community and do it. Black people are standing up in our community, and we are standing up and doing it in our community. We are doing it where it needs to be done, when there is a problem within our community. We don't need white people to come and stand with us. Stand in your own community and do it there. That's where the strength of character and courage comes in.
Well, I appreciate that point, and it's a very strong point. On the other hand, we also have to say that, and we should not discount the fact that we do see more and more, there tend to be younger people, but not exclusively so, but we are seeing more and more people becoming aware of the universality of things, because these problems, although they proliferate in the African-American Latino communities in particular, they're beginning to bleed out. And
exactly.
Other communities are being affected as well. And people are beginning to see, wait a minute. This is me
well.
Too. You know, this involves me and it involves my children and so forth. So I better really get hip to the idea that this is not just a black problem.
I understand it, Uchi. So what I'm saying is black people have always been the testing ground where they test these things to see how effective it can be before it is branched out and it's spread out into the general community at large. And as I've consistently said before, as it stands right now, we're told that white people are the majority in this country. And they're the ones who have all of these guns that they're stockpiling because they're expecting a revolution with this government. They're the ones who are going to be the next starter, because once they so far decimate the defenseless people, because this country is very good at putting up at fighting people, at being bullied and going after defenseless people. That is where they want to say that they have all their might and power, by going after these small defenseless nations. You don't see them want to bump up against the Russians, against the Chinas, against these big nations, against the North Koreas, who they know have the power to back them up into a corner. They go after these tiny countries like the Somalia, the Yemen, the Pakistan, the Afghanistan, where they think they can go in and get these quick and easy victories, and then they can run around and say, yeah, we're bad, you know, we show them what we can do. You ever show nobody nothing. A bully does not display how much of a good fighter he is when you're fighting somebody who's less skilled than yourself. You need to get on equal footing like somebody who's just as skilled as you and let us make a determination as to who is the biggest and the baddest. But the United States, the UK, the NATO, and all of them, they don't do that. They always go after the defenseless.
Got you. Got you. So bring it home. Bring it home. Let's hear where are you going with this.
What I'm going with this, you three, is as Alton said, and everyone has stated so eloquently, I don't see this as a time to throw up the flag and to say, okay, we need to fold up like deck chairs and, you know, go on home and march around here and protest about it. I don't see that need to. As Alton says, these attorneys, they need to take their behind back into the courtroom and ask for another grand jury. They need to also work with the ACLU out there in Missouri and see about getting this DA, getting him disbarred. That's what they need to start looking at doing, because what he has done is malfeasance in office. What he has done.
Well, you know, the thing is, of course, I repeat, on August the 19th, We said exactly what was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
I spelled it out. Alton also spelled it out. But I said this was not going to result in an indictment. And because we saw all the signs, and this is not something, this is, again, this is not because, you know, I have extrasensory perception or something like that. It is because you look at the history of these kinds of cases and how they typically have been handled. So you see where they're going.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
If I could tell that, and I'm not an attorney, if I can tell you the specifics, and if I could give you an analysis, just as a person who has covered these cases many times, if I could tell you exactly where you will find the problem, and it was exactly there, and I could tell you that as a journalist, why can't these lawyers have anticipated? In fact, they admitted they sure. anticipated this problem, but no preemptive moves by them.
They have no better plan, Dutrice. These lawyers, they're caught flat-footed. And that is what it has shown over and over again, because if you go through the records of these attorneys, all that they are doing is they want high-power cases where they can get a lot of publicity so that when another situation like this happens, they're going to be the top of the list of somebody to call in, because they can bring in the Sharptons, the Jacksons, and give them the publicity, the media attention that they need. But they are never here to seek justice. As you said, they always go for plan B. They never stick to plan A. We want judicial justice for what has been done. We don't want the money. We want the people who commit the crimes to be punished. That is what the system is here for. But they always end up going like the monkey, like they show that it's just, okay, are you going to take this or you want to go for what's behind the curtain? They always try and go for what's behind the curtain. They never try and stick to the plan and go with what is in front of them. And it has shown their ineptness. I'm no attorney myself, but I know basic law to know that they can go ahead and pursue this case instead of getting in front of the TV and waving the flag, as Austin says, and trying to say, okay, they want to go to the Justice Department. We can see the Justice Department is not going to do nothing about this case, Dutrice. You can see the track record here. They've already said they were not going to do anything about the case. They're going to leave it in the hands of the state of Missouri and let the governor and all of his henchmen, let them do exactly what they want to do or they intend to do. Nothing is going to come from this. The family's going to get a nice payout settlement like the Martin family did, and they're going to slinker off into the corner with their money until these group of ambulance chasers, they're going to run off for the next case that happens, and you can see them on TV again. That's what they're going to
do. Well, you brought us quite a bit to consider today. Thank you so much, Sarah, for your call.
You're welcome, you three.
From New York, Maat, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Good day, all.
Hello,
Utrice.
Thank you.
A peaceful and safe holiday festive Saturnalia, if you will. I would like to suggest three strategies where we really move forward. I think this seems to be a pivotal point, because I'm hearing that black folks are seriously saying no justice, no profit. So I saw, at least in Ferguson, and I hope it spreads. I think it's spreading to New York, too, to some extent, where people are saying instead of this crazy Black Friday, it's Black Lives Matter, you know, throughout this season. We really need to vote with our bucks, as it were. Now, a couple things, especially with all that good information that Brother Alton gives us. There's a clip out there. Now, you know, there was on C-SPAN a forum with the local media, a couple from the St. Louis Dispatch, and you know, you had a Bynes, a committee woman, I think it's Patricia Bynes, and then some interns at, I guess, a TV station or two. And one of the first things they said, and it's online, is that they had scrubbed the record of, Darren Wilson, except that Anonymous was able to pull out one of his records, and we need to get that clip out there. because he comes on a household and the person must have sort of been on their porch or whatever, and he's like about 5 or 6 yards away, and he's videotaping him. That Wilson is announcing to the resident there that he has a summons for him. And when the resident, very politely, I mean, you know, he says, "Sir, may I get your name?" And Wilson's response was, you know, it was sort of foul, you know what I mean? "I'm going to lock up your ass," or something to that effect. And then he comes on the resident, of course, as he's grabbing him to arrest him, the video cuts off. But I think it's important to get that clip out there, and even to make sure for those who have, I mean, we can try to see if there's an information number, what have you, but for those who can easily get through to Leslie McSpadden, I don't know the full name of the stepfather, maybe, you know, and the dad, is make sure that they know about that clip, which shows that this sweet face, who doesn't have any PR going for him because he should have never stepped up to the interview. Utrecht, CNN had I didn't catch the full extent, but CNN brought on someone who reads body language and, you know, to tell your high anxiety. And this person on CNN, high anxiety, and he was essentially lying. So he was stupid to come out and sort of put salt in the festering wounds. But I think we also need to get to those parents and let them know all this information, because they need to know that they have a right to what did he say, to squash the results of that grand jury, and to also put in a motion for judicial review. And lastly, if you can believe this, I heard it on, well, one more strategy. I heard it on Coast to Coast. He had on someone, I can't remember the name, but his website was onlinecolumnist.com. And he and Jesse Ventura had a whole different view than the padlam that George Norrie, the host. So those of us who are up late, because they sort of got me in a box where, you know, they can't let me say what I need to say to bring the other view about the first lie of the grand jury, where the first press conference, the Chief Jackson answered 5 or 6 questions because reporters kept asking, "Why is it that you would bring out this video?" And he kept saying, well, it wasn't related because Wilson was coming from a sick call. But that's the first thing that this, in his diatribe that McCullen said. And this whole thing about the charging, you know, that Michael Brown, by the way, had flip-flops. And in the store, he actually had on sneakers and socks. So he was supposedly charging in flip-flops, but that is not what the initial witnesses said to the media, as everybody wanted to know what had happened. So we need to call coast to coast, get in and tell Tom, the screener, that, you know, come up with something that you could start out with that you want to talk about, and then bring out the points of Ferguson that George Norrie doesn't want to deal with. And I'm going to contact him on Monday because I'm about to do a column for Black Star News. No, I just wanted to make the point. Call Coast to Coast, get on the air, and start, because George Norrie doesn't even bring on our great black scholars and activists, and he needs to stop.
But the issue is, though, when we talk about media and media coverage, what is blatant in this whole, the coverage of this whole thing, is that the reporters are not prepared. The reporters have no idea of how to cover a case before the grand jury. I mean, they call in, you know, the CNN would bring in Tubin, and they would have other people, you know, experts and so forth. But they're really, the average reporter does not know how the system works. And even the experts, as they analyze it, they still are not really very well versed in how the system works. They really are giving a point of view that doesn't take into account how the system works every day.
Now let me bring up this because I almost forgot. This guy who is on online columnist, he heard a report with Scalia, and he mentioned this Scalia on the Supreme Court being, you know, conservative. In fact, I consider Scalia off the rail in most instances. But he came out somehow. I didn't hear it personally, but it's probably on that website where he actually brought up, and Jesse Ventura did too, about how can you bring this Wilson onto your grand jury and there not be any cross-examination. So if those of us who can get to the parents and sort of pull their coats about the motion for judicial review with Scalia backing it up or for the squash the results, I think we might be moving forward. And I'll let you get some more calls on. Appreciate your work. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call today. From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, you three.
Hello.
How are you doing? Hi. Wanted to also say hello to all of the Lead Stories listeners and the PRN listeners in general.
Thank you.
I'm doing okay, and I hope you're doing okay, and I hope everyone has a safe and happy holiday season with their sharing time with their loved ones. I've been watching everything that's been happening, not only in the last couple of weeks and the last few months, but it's, to me, all of this is not happening by coincidence. They're ratcheting up, and they're using several strategies all at the same time. It's clear to me that the United States government in general, the shadow government, not the ones we think who are running it, but they've turned against the American people. Now, when I say strategies, I see this as on different levels. They're doing psyops on us.
Psychological operations.
Right.
Okay.
For example, two examples in the last few months, while this whole Michael Brown thing was going on, we had the distraction of ISIS, which turned out to be a big nothing, really, because what we're doing is we're on both sides of a conflict, like we always are, and it's the same mess. But they throw it out in front of you to get you distracted and to get your reaction, and it, most of all, to invoke fear. Now, the other one that I see in the last few months, as far as this manipulation with fear, is this Ebola thing. Now, when they initially started bringing this out, I called your soul and I said, there's no need for everybody to be afraid because this is just, you know, the chances of you getting it are astronomical. And look, it's out of the news. Who's talking about that anymore? And what I'm saying is they use the media to manipulate us in different ways. The other strategy that I want to bring forward, and I'm moving through fast so you can get some more callers on, but the other strategy is divide and conquer. This situation with Michael Brown, tragic, and I got sick to my stomach when the inevitable decision came from the grand jury. Of course, we knew that was going to happen. You, Alton Maddox, even predicted it and analyzed it on the 19th of August, as you said. We knew it was going to happen. So manipulating the law, like you said, to produce certain results. Now let's look at what's really going on here. The root problem of this, and of course, when there's an ill in society, when there's something going on that's wrong and people are suffering, brown and black people are going to be the people who suffer the most intensely. We know that. So the root issue here is police power, militarization of police, and people with power subjugating and abusing people without power. Automatic's laid out, and I'm so happy for you having him on there, and I appreciate it so much. That man taught me so much this week that I feel I could probably pass the bar right now. he's a brilliant person. Now, he taught me a few things I had no idea about, like as far as, you know, they're putting it out in the media that this grand jury decision is it, and that's it. And the narrative is, let's move on because there's nothing else we can do. Automatics pointed out quite correctly that, yes, there is a lot of things you can do. You don't have to stop at one grand jury decision, not at all, not by a long shot. So they're using the media also, too, to push this narrative that what's wrong with these black people? The system did what it was supposed to. Let's just, you guys need to get over it. Why are you rioting? So the thing is, it's very hard to get white support behind this. If they turn on their news and they see black people burning down buildings, crashing in windows, doing this type of stuff, and that's a plan by the media to alienate good white people who would be in favor of these protesters. You see what I'm saying? That's another tactic they're using, divide and conquer. But with this particular issue, it's coming for white people as well. I mean, all you got to do is you go on YouTube and put in the search box, police shoot unarmed. Don't even put man, woman, black, whatever, after that. And all these things start coming up. The majority of them are black people, but there are some white people in there as well who get shot for no reason by the police. Now, this is their strategy. Let's get these white people who are poor and oppressed against these black people. That's divide and conquer. And so the way they do that, they manipulate what you see and what you hear so that you don't have the support from people who are going through the same thing that you're going through pretty much. Now, that's a power issue which affects mostly brown and black people, of course. So they're employing these strategies, and there are a couple of more strategies that I won't go into because I know, you know, I'm taking up some time here. But appreciate your work, appreciate your analysis, your brilliant analysis on all of these things. And I really wanted to ask Automatics a couple of questions. So when I was listening to him, it just brought up so many things in my mind that I wanted to ask him. So I wish you had like a call-in session, maybe.
Well, we will. We will do that very shortly. As I said, we wanted to get ahead of this announcement by providing a clinical, doing a clinic, if you will, on the law and what you want to remember as these announcements are made. And you would notice, really, the people who are covering the news do not know, do not understand how the courts work. When I was running a journalism training program, everybody was required to understand how the courts work. All of the courts, the criminal court, Supreme Court, probate court, surrogate court, bankruptcy court. You're supposed to know how all these courts work.
Uh-huh.
But the average reporter going out there, they basically stick a mic in your hand and you are a journalist.
Right.
You're not required to study anything. You just show up as a blank slate and then you report what is painfully obvious. Oh, look, a whole bunch of people are over there and they're angry. A whole bunch of people are over there and they're throwing stones.
Speaking of that, Utrecht, one last thing I want to say. Speaking of that, speaking of journalists, know-nothing journalists, I want people to go, I saw this on the Young Turks, but you can just go to YouTube or your favorite search engine and just Google Don Lemon gets it wrong in Ferguson or something like that. So he has Jesse, well, first of all, they have Don Lemon and somebody else, it might have been Cuomo, somebody on the ground in Ferguson. They're reporting, and you see all these people in the background. So he brings Jesse Jackson on it, attempting to interview Jesse Jackson. And this idiot, Don Lemon, who is an African-American, of course, I don't know if people know who he is, but he's an African-American, supposed to be a journalist. He asked Jesse Jackson the most idiotic question. His question was, I'm going to paraphrase. Hello, Jesse, how you doing? Now, the first question I want to ask you is, what seems to be wrong with these protesters nowadays? Because they seem more violent than they were back in your day and Dr. King's day. They just seem like that they're more violent. So what's wrong with these people? Basically, what's his question? This guy totally had no clue of all the deaths, all the riots. I mean, you had Watts, you had Chicago, you had, you know, St. Louis, all these other places who erupted in violence in the late 50s, 60s, and early 70s. He had, even Oakland, all that. He had no. He acted as if that didn't even exist. But asking Jesse Jackson a question like that, like these people are violent now and they weren't back then. He doesn't even deserve any kind of platform. The guy.
You know, but this is, believe it or not, it is rampant throughout the industry, where you have people in high places, in the newsrooms. These are the people who are the gatekeepers of news, have no clue.
Right.
They have no clue. They're ignorant, and they're able to democratize their ignorance. They get on, and they're given the space to just do this kind of stupid, vapid reporting, which I would have found unacceptable even in a first-year journalism student.
I couldn't believe it, Utrecht. I was sitting here, what is wrong with this guy? Is an African-American. He's paid millions of dollars, and it's obvious this guy is the biggest idiot on television. I mean, Jesse Jackson, right? To give Jesse Jackson some credit, he said he reminded him that even in Dr. King's day, there were violent riots all over the country. So he did correct him on it. But it's just the point. Why would you ask a question like that? I mean, the violence.
Which is purely subjective, as if he's not old enough to even know what personally to know what the nature of protest was back in the day. He's a young guy. He doesn't have a clue.
I'm not that much older than him.
He's a rebel without a clue.
I'm 43. I'm not that much older than him. He's probably like 35, between 35 and 40. I know about all that, but I just think that the media in general in this country is sorely lacking. They come on with an agenda, number one, to dumb you down even more, and then also the anchors and the journalists are so vapid and so empty, and that's why, you know, I talked a couple months ago about a movie called Idiocracy, and this is what's happening. Our society, because these are the people they're learning from, people who know nothing. You see what I'm saying? So how can we expect the population to be smart and informed when they're listening to people like this on stations like CNN, Fox, which has the biggest viewership, and MSNBC, these people who know nothing? You see what I'm saying?
I do, because this has been my gripe all along in media. I just can't imagine. You know, I see people who are, I mean, huge, very big, quote, stars, unquote. And if you were to put them in front of a computer and say, give me a paragraph on such and such and such, well, now you will see super stressed out people. They can't do it. The people who are running the news operations these days, you wonder, what is it that they don't get about their profession, that what they're supposed to be doing, and what is required of somebody who is supposedly a journalist? You're supposed to be able to do independent work, study, research, so that you, when in any given situation, you can competently handle a subject and use your talents in a way to bring the fullest understanding of the subject to the public as possible. But we have people, like I said, just blithering idiots. And they're given a mic, and that's it. Go ahead, you're a journalist. But then, you know, the industry itself has dumbed itself down. It has decided to, you know, go Hollywood, and you are chosen because you have a particular look or because you fulfill a particular diversity requirement, or, you know, that's the basis on which people are now in the business for the large measure. And we have a major relaxation going on. I mean, my little journalism training program was way ahead of graduate schools of journalism because I didn't play around. You cannot cover anything without doing independent research. You ought to be able to do that.
Right.
Well, and so your story becomes, because, you know, you look at every story as a historical document, so that you have some, you offer some kind of knowledge to people, and you show some degree of authority on the subject because you have researched the subject. But that is not required generally today.
No.
Not at all.
And it's, you know, they've substituted all of that you just mentioned with all this light, fluffy stuff that gets viewers, and they don't even, much less researching anything, they don't even have a basic working knowledge of things. Which was highlighted in his question. And it's so maddening to me, Utrecht. It's so maddening. I look at these people and I'm like, these are the people that people are getting their information from.
Like, but don't forget, like, you know, this is purposeful as well. It is done because the view is that this is a black issue and it's black people. Mm-hmm. And we will get a black person to ask the questions that we would ask, but if we were to ask them ourselves, we would be branded racist. So we ask a Don Lemon to come up with a stupid question like that and ask that question of another black person who is now supposed to take on the burden mm-hmm. of explaining the black world, you know, how is he? What is Jesse Jackson supposed to say?
Right, exactly.
You know, it's just silly. It's just absolutely silly. A complete waste of time. But they give these folks a lot of play, and they have the microphone. And I've heard his interviews, and I go, my God, what is there? Nobody in the newsroom able to say, listen. You're going to have to really understand how you do an interview. You have to prepare for an interview. You should not be asking these silly questions. You know, you should be a little bit more authoritative. You know, when you get up there and you ask a question like that, instantly what you're communicating is that somebody has given you a clue as to what your purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, you went there on an assignment. You see,
mm-hmm. yep.
It's the way the New York Times used to do it in the civil rights days, when they would not send white reporters into the chaos of the South. So they would get black reporters and they would give the black reporters marching orders. This is what we want you to report. My good friend Earl Caldwell had been saying this for quite a while. He was at the New York Times. And he was given an assignment when he went to cover Martin Luther King. You know, we want King. Basically, your job is to go there and write negative stories. And he, of course, didn't do that. But that was his assignment. And that would have been his assignment, to go there and write stories with a particular bent and file them.
So. Right. But it's worse now, because that question literally was scripted for him. That's what that was. They not only told him, here's your mission, they gave him specific questions that is really stupid to ask this person who is one of the seminal figures in the civil rights struggle who's still alive. I mean, why would you even disrespect your own people that way? It's just because he's reading off of a teleprompter. They literally constructed that question for him to ask, because the framing is, look at all these violent black people. We don't know why they're violent. They're just violent.
And Jesse Jackson is supposed to be an instant anthropologist and sociologist explaining the black psyche and the black behavior to the world. It's silly. Mm-hmm. It's just plain silly. But thank you so much for your call today.
Thank you.
888-874-4888. You know, so many things this case and the fallout from the case have told us that we seem to forget, and we they come up only in these kinds of disasters, in these kinds of crises, do we visit these things. But of course, these cases, although they take different forms, the question that, and I talked about this at length some time ago, the major issue here is that it comes back to the simple question of, do blacks in the United States have equal rights? Are we citizens of the United States? And that's a question. It has popped up in the nature of voting rights or civil rights, or in this case, you know, judicial rights, prosecutorial rights, all these things, various ways of morphing the same question, but it is the same question. It is not just about the police brutality here or, you know, affirmative action issues over there. It is all the same question. Do black people have the same rights as citizens? In fact, are they citizens? It all comes back to that very seminal question. It hasn't changed in all these years. That's been the struggle. That's been the continuum of struggle. It's all about affirming the rights of citizens. You know, so when we see these cases, we always have to keep in mind the context for them. And you may hear, of course, the Dred Scott decision referred to interminably, because it came to symbolize the quintessential belief and philosophy of the country that black people have no rights that the white man is bound to respect. That was Supreme Court law. That was the majority opinion of the Supreme Court in the Dred Scott case, written by Roger B. Taney. And he explains it. I recommend everyone to familiarize yourselves with this case and the Supreme Court decision in that case, Dred Scott, 1857. The case really embodies the prevailing philosophy, the thinking, the mindset of the people who set themselves up as the controlling force in this country, the elite of this country. And even though there were amendments to the Constitution, even though there have been different legislative initiatives that have resulted in different laws at the state and local and federal levels to amend some of these things, the essential thinking still remains intact. And that is why we have, in Ferguson, we have a prosecuting attorney who clearly is not really all that gifted, because he's made so many mistakes, but is confident that he can. By the way, the release of the information is itself against the law. This is supposed to be a secret proceeding, and it is not a trial. It is not supposed to be a trial. Grand jury is not supposed to be acting like a trial jury. But they break all these rules. And just for once, I've been watching and listening to the news, and I'm waiting to see when it would occur to anybody to mention all these things that just were cast aside as being unimportant. And this has been the basic clamor from the African-American community. They're positioning this case as if, well, nothing else would do but the man's indictment. Actually, what the cry really has been is, follow the law. Let the case follow the law. It has been ruled a homicide. We know the person who is linked to the crime. Homicide is a crime. Follow the law. Bring the case to trial. And here we see an absolute unwillingness, in fact, an intention not to bring this case to trial. It will just not happen. And this has been the common thread through all these other cases that look as if they're not at all related. But it is exactly the same thing. I raised it with the Tawana Brawley case. People thought, well, you know, she was determined to have perpetrated a hoax. Well, by whom? And a really, really corrupt process. And the whole issue of the Tawana Brawley case is the unwillingness, the insistence by the state that it will not be brought to trial. And that's exactly what was being asked. Bring the case to trial. You have people who were identified. You have corroborative proof. You have, and by the way, that case as well, the Brawley case, also involved a homicide. Because one of her alleged attackers, who was found with a gunshot wound to the head, and it was immediately ruled a suicide. A medical examiner reviewed it and said, absolutely not. This is a homicide. So even in a case like that, there is the insistence there will be no trial. And why this insistence on a trial? Because it is one of the basic rights of citizenship. When you are a citizen of a country, this is one of your basic rights. So in the denial of the trial, or in the corruption of the trial process, what the central question again comes to is, do blacks have the same rights of citizens? Any citizen, any white citizen in a similar circumstance, the automatic thing would have been, let the case proceed according to the law. This is the law. Let the case proceed according to the law. There's enough information, there's enough evidence to link a person to a crime. Then the grand jury's job is to say, yes, we think that there's enough evidence to bring this case to trial. The grand jury's job is not to say, well, we exonerate this person. They're not a trial jury. But you see how this is a continuing theme. And even though it is taking place in the judicial realm, it is the same question. That's what I keep pointing to. It's the same question that arises over and over again. And in order to understand the link of all of this, the philosophy that undergirds all of this, you've got to read the decision. I recommend it. It is a must. Everybody has to understand that, I think, to get a sense of why these things are going the way they're going. The Dred Scott decision. Read the decision. Written, the majority decision written by Justice Roger B. Taney. In that case, you will understand a lot about society, the philosophy that undergirds everything in our society today. It is the explicit expression of apartheid thinking and rule. And it exists today in letter and in spirit. just the same. I want to thank you so much for joining me today and for contributing your thoughts. I'm so delighted that the past number of episodes we've done on this case have been meaningful to you and have enlightened you. It's very, very important. And actually, I would say, as a result of that, this audience is more educated than most any other audience about this case and about understanding the misapplication of the law and the corruption of the law. And this is at the root level, this is what black people have been upset about. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Wake Up Call with Richard Martin. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com and on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. And thank you so much for the pleasure and the privilege of your company today and every day. Bye-bye.